This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
A horrendous new war in the Middle East fills TV screens. Or you can tune into the long soap opera, The Trials of Donald Trump. It is the society of the spectacle, as French philosopher Guy Debord predicted many years ago. Toss in people around us getting COVID again. It's very hard to take. Wouldn't it be great to just get back to normal times, business as usual? Except coming out of the background of normal and business as usual, it's killing the ecosphere that supports us all. During the fear and excitement of storms and fires and floods and news, the other species and plants, from insects to fish and mammals, they are shrinking, they are dying out, they are disappearing. We start with how many big-name insurance companies still carry coal insurance, and it could crash the economy and the planet. We have a new interview with Carly Fabian of Public Citizen. Then we review methane leaks from the badly named natural gas still going on, still making unnatural gas as bad as coal for the planet, no matter what they say, 10 years after Scott Miller of Harvard warned us about that. Modern connected humans sail through the latest disaster to the next, forgetting the last one within weeks. But nature doesn't recover fast, and neither do communities and people. Photographer Robert Leslie documented lasting damage after Hurricane Katrina. We're going to hear that interview. Are we stuck on the event horizon? Is reality just too slow to see through our new digital eyes? As heat, floods, and wildfires smash all records this year, at least coal production is on the way out, thanks to greener energy like wind and solar. Except that isn't true at all. New solar and wind are only helping to cover increasing demand for power in all sectors. The dirtiest, most polluting fossil fuel in the world, old King Coal, reached its highest production ever in 2022. In capitalism, coal mining is not possible without insurance of some kind. Big insurance companies have policies that supposedly lead them out of coal coverage, except they violate even those weak published promises on coal. That is true in the United States, now the world's fourth largest coal producer. The American nonprofit group Public Citizen just issued a report covering coal, the top insurers of U.S. coal mining. We reached Public Citizen researcher and spokesperson Carly Fabian. From Denver, Colorado, Carly Fabian, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Alex. It's a pleasure to join today and talk about our work.
Yeah, well, too many people think coal is being phased out. Carly, what is the reality?
The reality is that while coal is declining, it's not declining rapidly enough to meet international climate goals. And one of the ways that it could be accelerated is to have large financial institutions like banks and insurance companies issue these commitments to phasing out coal. And the good news is that hundreds of companies have done that already, including at least 45 insurance companies. But the key here is, how much can we trust these commitments? Are these meaningful efforts to accelerate the phase out of coal? Or are these commitments filled with the kinds of loopholes that provide a lifeline for what should be a dying industry?
And that's what we're going to investigate. But first, why should we blame insurance companies for heat waves, floods, and storms? They aren't actually producing fossil fuels.
Outside the fossil fuel industry, there's actually few actors that have more influence over climate than insurance companies. They can act as gatekeepers in the financial system, deciding which risks to take on and which to reject. And we're already seeing them exercise that power in painful ways as they're dropping homeowners who are exposed to climate disasters. But just as homeowners can't buy a home or maintain their mortgage without insurance, fossil fuel companies can't operate without it either. And crucially, without insurance, fossil fuel companies can't get the financing they need to start new projects, the kinds that would prevent us from meeting climate goals. Although it wasn't the focus of this report, it's also worth noting that through the premiums they collect and then invest, these insurance companies are also some of the largest and most influential investors in the world. And the latest record shows they had at least $500 million invested in fossil fuels.
So I know that in Europe, the insurance companies talk a really green game, but they do insure giant coal mines in America. So how does that work?
That's right. And European companies have really been ahead of the curve when it comes to announcing restrictions on coal. But companies don't typically disclose their actual underwriting data or their contracts with fossil fuel companies. So it's often hard to evaluate just how effective these policies really are. And the documents we obtained for this report provide a rare window to compare the company's claims with their actual records of their underwriting practices. And unfortunately, we found that even some of the European companies with seemingly very strong statements include significant loopholes.
Well, I'm particularly disappointed that giant insurance company Swiss Re violates its own policy in the United States, according to your report. Swiss Re was among the first and bravest corporations to warn about the dangers of climate change. They started in the early 1990s. They attend conferences, they make presentations and statements demonstrating their awareness and concern about climate change. But hidden in the back room, they are making money to produce more climate-damaging coal. Is that what you found?
It's true that Swiss Re is an expert in understanding weather and climate-related risks, and there's this understandable desire right now to look at insurance companies and hope that they're going to become this sort of corporate counterweight to fossil fuels. But ultimately, we need to know if this is translating into action. We can't give insurers a gold star just for acknowledging climate change. They're not PR firms, but major financial institutions. So the question we're asking is, are these companies really putting their money where their mouth is? And with Swiss Re in particular, what had made them a leader was that they pledged to stop insuring coal clients with more than 30% exposure to thermal coal. But the documents we obtained found that they're insuring a thermal coal company that gets more than 90% of revenue from coal. And the way that they're doing that is they're providing insurance through a larger parent company that's a diversified miner. So they're technically insuring them through another company. But this means that Swiss Re is either violating their own policy or they're crafted it in a way that allows them to insure any thermal coal mining company as long as they do it through a different parent company, which would be a massive loophole.
It is interesting to see Berkshire Hathaway among the coal mine insurers, covering one mine, but it's a big one. It produces 8,313,000 short tons of coal. Warren Buffett's companies include one of the largest single railways shipping American coal, and that's especially from big open pit mines in Wyoming to ports like Vancouver, Canada, unfortunately, for export to Asia. Coal is shipped on the BNSF Railway, a wholly owned subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway. So, people who dump on mega billionaires like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg often give Warren Buffett a pass. But actually, Buffett is sourcing more damage to the planet through coal than the tech billionaires, and he rarely mentions climate change, and he's not an activist. Isn't Warren Buffett on the edge of becoming a climate disaster profiteer himself?
You're right. Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett have some deep connections to fossil fuels, but we actually think the issue is much wider than one person or one company and really goes across the industry. And issues become, who's going to pay the cost of climate change and who's going to profit from them? And so far, the insurance companies are really profiting because the ones that underwrite fossil fuels can profit from the fossil fuels, but then turn around and charge more to their customers. But the same is true of companies that invest in fossil fuels, like State Farm. And insurance companies could even benefit from increased dependence on their services as disasters become more frequent. That's why one of the insurers that we featured in the report describes this increasing frequency of disasters as a situation that for them is, quote unquote, a glass that's more than half full. And then when they've had enough, the problem is they can jump ship and then leave the public on the hook when it's time to pay the costs.
Yeah, tell us more about that. Your investigation found that some of the insurance companies who refuse climate-driven damages in some areas or even whole states are still insuring coal mines. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is something that's particularly outrageous, that some of the insurers like Liberty Mutual are not just renewing contracts for coal mines, but they're also dropping homeowners, typically in the name of climate change. And this really shows a double standard in who's paying the price for climate change. Homeowners can get dropped suddenly, But for fossil fuels, it seems like insurance companies have been willing to bend over backwards and continue offering them insurance, even crafting loopholes in their policies to do that.
In an article in The Hill, which was based on your new report, Saul Elbein suggests lack of flood, fire, and storm insurance may be hiding the next financial crisis, because big banks sell all kinds of financial instruments and investments based on mortgages, and they assume that the home is insured against losses. But rising prices for insurance, if it is available at all, add up to more uninsured homes in America, and nobody is sure how many there are. So if many homes get wiped out by extreme weather without insurance, banks who hold the mortgages have to eat the losses. And if they lose too much, all those instruments they offered could tumble, as happened during the crisis in 2008. So coal insurance and climate coverage withdrawal could turn out to be a really big issue.
Yes, the risk isn't just limited to the insurance companies themselves or even just individual insurance consumers. With the 2008 financial crisis, one thing we learned is that even seemingly sophisticated companies can miss big threats when short-term profits blind them until it's too late. And when that happens, those risks can be passed throughout the economy. And one of the ways that insurers have been justifying their delay tactics on climate change is that they offer, you know, one-year contracts, which makes it easy to procrastinate by waiting until the last minute to drop homeowners or claiming that they're going to wait until later to drop fossil fuels when they become unprofitable. But what we're already seeing now in the homeowners insurance market is that the strategy, you know, not only underestimates the risks from fossil fuels, but also the long-term implications on insurance markets, your local economy, and then the whole financial system. And without intervention, the public could end up being on the hook for a bailout.
Well, speaking of bailouts, in 2008, the public did have to bail out one of the biggest insurance companies in America called AIG. But even despite that, now AIG, tell us about their investments and in insurance in coal.
That's right. But about 15 years ago, AIG nearly failed and in the process nearly wrecked the economy because of reckless bets on housing and mortgages, and then ended up with a massive bailout of $182 billion. And then when we, you know, fast forward to today, more renewables are coming online every day, but insurance companies, as we're seeing in this report, are holding fast to their fossil fuel clients. So ultimately, you know, what happens when fossil fuels aren't profitable anymore, or they aren't as profitable? Concern that insurers like AIG may be acting recklessly with fossil fuels now, just as they did with housing. And because AIG is one of the world's top insurers of fossil fuels, it's particularly important that we know whether they're making meaningful commitments to really phase out fossil fuels like coal. And the good news initially was that last year the company announced a new policy committing to restrict support for coal. But when we were doing the research for this report, what we found is that even after they announced the policy, they renewed every coal contract that we examined. So that means that they insured at least 30% of all U.S. coal. So either they're violating their policy or the policy was pretty toothless to begin with.
About 45% of all fossil fuel emissions come from burning coal, and there are more and more lawsuits launched against fossil fuel producers for their role in climate change. Are these big insurance companies covering those damages from lawsuits, which could be billions of dollars? Or could we be suing the insurance companies themselves?
It's an interesting question because some of the insurance companies are actually already involved with lawsuits with fossil fuel companies to decide who's going to pay at least the legal fees for these lawsuits. And a lot of the lawsuits against fossil fuel companies that you've mentioned follow the example of state lawsuits against tobacco companies. And we know it wasn't just the government that sued tobacco companies. It was actually health insurance companies as well. And so it's possible that property insurance companies now are going to be looking at fossil fuel companies and at some point trying to, you know, limit their own liability for these types of payouts, or also looking at fossil fuel companies to pay up. But insurance companies should also be concerned for their own interests, because the Senate Budget Committee recently announced an investigation into why and how seven insurance companies, including some that were included in this report, like AIG and Liberty Mutual, how those companies are still supporting the underwriting and investment of new fossil fuel projects. So this could lead to, you know, more opportunities for accountability in the future. And ultimately, insurers can't have it both ways forever. At some point, they're going to need to pick a side.
Well, and maybe the public can pick a side. Are there some insurance companies who really have gotten out of insuring coal altogether?
There are a few companies that have taken bigger steps, like AXA and Alliance, but there's no companies that we're aware of that previously underwrote or insured coal that have now exited. On the investment side, however, there is at least one company in the U.S. called Lemonade that promised from their founding that they won't be investing in fossil fuels.
Now, we all want steel products. Can we afford to give coal used for steel, that's called metallurgical coal, can we give that a pass?
No, we can't. Decarbonizing the steel industry could be key to achieving our climate goals and keeping them reached. And that's particularly true as low-carbon alternatives emerge. There's a key gap here with the policies from financial institutions, including insurers, when they ignore met coal in their commitments. And in the case of what we looked at in the report, the insurance company Zurich was insuring a thermal mine via companies that primarily get their revenue from met mining, which is basically another loophole. So if we're ignoring met coal in these financial company commitments, that could also enable thermal as well.
Well, mining coal has killed thousands of miners due to lung diseases. But it's not just miners who are at risk. How do these coal mines contribute to public health risks far away from the mine site?
That's right. In addition to the serious threats to miners themselves, coal mines pose major health risks to nearby communities. The pollution from these mines can increase the risk of health problems like cardiovascular disease, cancer, reproductive problems. So it's not just climate change that's the only reason to be concerned about these mines.
Can coal mining continue without insurance from these giant companies? And if not, wouldn't state and federal governments step in to force insurance on the taxpayers, just as Florida did for flood insurance?
It's certainly becoming harder and more expensive to insure coal mines, and that's not something that you'll hear just from advocacy groups like us. It's also coming from financial analysts. And, of course, we know that the fossil fuel industry isn't going to just accept this without a fight. This past year, there was a bill proposed in Texas designed to prevent insurers from even considering environmental factors in their underwriting. But even the insurance industry's largest lobby group, the APCIA, opposed this bill. And we're also seeing signs that regulators in other states like Connecticut and New York are moving in the opposite direction, issuing guidance to require insurers to address climate risks. So it's not looking too good for the coal industry here.
If tough insurance regulations push up the price of coal, energy prices might go up, the price of everything goes up, and somebody will die of cold or heat because they can't afford the energy bills. That's what the coal industry is saying, and they even say it in advertising and television. What do you say?
So the public is actually already dealing with extreme weather from climate change. They're dealing with wildfires, hurricanes, and other disasters as well. And they're already paying the price through their insurance premiums. Plus, the cost of adapting homes and infrastructure, particularly power grids, that's going to add up very quickly. So if we want to avoid extreme temperature, if we want to keep people safe and in their homes, avoid higher prices, we're going to need to get very serious about making progress on our climate goals.
Public Citizen is campaigning against coal mine insurance as a business at both the state and federal levels. Tell us about your testimony for a Connecticut state government hearing.
Sure. So as insurers demonstrate that they're not going to take enough action on their own to reduce emissions, the public can actually demand that regulators and legislators step in. And that's exactly what started in Connecticut, ironically a state that's often known as the headquarters of the insurance industry. So 2 years ago, Connecticut took the first step on this path by requiring their insurance commissioner to incorporate the state's own emissions reduction targets into its insurance regulation. And they noted that the insurance commissioner has to pay special attention to coal. But this year, a new bill would actually take the next step, and it would use a concept that both the industry and every consumer is already familiar with. Essentially, you break it, you buy it. insurers that underwrite fossil fuels would be required to pay a tax on those premiums, and then the state would be able to use those funds to invest in climate resiliency projects. So if insurers continue to cover risky projects that fuel climate disasters and ask the public to pay the price, it's only fair to go back to these insurers and ask them to pay their fair share of the repair costs.
In July, Congressional Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Adam Schiff introduced the Polluter Portfolio Disclosure Act. What is the intent there, Carly?
Sure. So part of the problem that we're highlighting in this report is that companies are making big claims, and not just on coal restrictions, but there are also companies making big claims about going net zero by a particular time, including at least 31 insurance companies. But just like with coal commitments, it's very difficult to check them without the underlying data. And ultimately, it shouldn't require this kind of investigative report to find the basic details. We also know that as the risks grow, it's not just advocacy groups and the public who deserve and need to see the details, but financial regulators at the national level need to be reviewing this kind of information to make sure that companies aren't creating risks that then transfer to the rest of the economy. So the bill would require insurers to provide their investment and their underwriting, you know, their insurance data on fossil fuels annually to all the relevant stakeholders so that it can be reviewed. And we could ultimately see more bills like this, not just in the House, potentially in the Senate, also at the state level, and more efforts at accountability as pressure heats up on insurers.
So in the end, what do we want?
So for insurers, they need to stop insuring new and expanding coal mines and any new coal clients that aren't aligned with a credible science-based pathway to limit emissions. And they also need to begin phasing out existing clients that aren't aligned with this pathway and aren't making progress. But at the same time, we need to recognize that insurers aren't acting quickly enough on their own because they're not incentivized to. And that is when it's time for regulators to step in. And this is where local groups can actually have a really big say, because insurance regulators and legislators are typically used to hearing from the industry primarily. And insurance companies have been really successful in the past at weakening efforts at regulation by claiming that, you know, we just need more data, or they need more time, or the risks need to become more apparent. Basically, delay, delay, delay. But when it's the public showing up to these hearings, the public can say, you know, our homes are on fire and underwater, and we're getting dropped by our insurance company. How much longer are you really going to wait? How much more data do you need?
For those who don't know, what is Public Citizen?
Public Citizen is a consumer advocacy organization that champions the public interest in the halls of power. And I work within the climate program, which is specifically focused on climate-related financial regulation.
So we've been speaking with Public Citizen researcher and spokesperson Carly Fabian. She helped produce the new report called Covering Coal, the Top Insurers of U.S. Coal Mining. It's free. You can download it from www.citizen.org, or you can use links in my show blog at equalshock.org. Carly, thank you so much for shining a light in this dark coal space.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.
Recently, President Biden's administration approved massive new natural gas extraction in America. This is supposedly for international security. The U.S. wants to keep the lights on in Europe by cashing in on the bans of Russian gas. There is big money to be made. So-called natural gas is just methane, one of the most dangerous greenhouse gases. Emily Atkins, in her great newsletter, Heated, says we need to relabel this fossil fuel to methane gas. Methane gas is responsible for at least 20% to 30% of the record warming we just experienced. Stanford's Rob Jackson says a third of warming is caused by methane, and the gas industry does play a big part in those emissions. Again and again, we've been talked into the dream world, where natural gas is the safer, cleaner way to power the planet, much better than coal or oil. But early on, Cornell professor Robert Howarth questioned this narrative. His team investigated and found fracking sites were releasing massive amounts of methane. You could see it in camera shots over the wells with specialized film. The leaks continued through old pipelines and poorly maintained storage and transfer facilities. They have to vent them, after all. Then cities like Baltimore or Boston, which installed natural gas in 1887, they leaked tons of methane through all their corroding pipes. The researchers found high volumes of methane pouring out of sidewalks and right outside a school. Since then, paper after paper showed, when you really count all the emissions, producing and consuming unnatural gas is at least as bad as burning coal. Biden and the broad public don't know or conveniently forget these facts. The atmosphere does not forget, and we are burning for all those sins. So let's review what we already knew in 2013, and it's still going on. Radio EcoShock guest Scott Miller from Harvard was part of a group of scientists that found real methane emissions in the atmosphere are at least 50% greater than the Environmental Protection Agency has told the public. They found leaking methane from fossil fuel operations everywhere. Listen in. Big Picture Radio right now with Alex Smith. Get it all, ecoshock.org. A new university study shows emissions of the dangerous greenhouse gas methane are much higher than the American government reports. Have artificially low figures protected the American cattle industry and fossil fuel producers? Joining us is Scott M. Miller. He's from the Department of Earth and Planetary Science at Harvard. Scott is the lead author of a paper just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science titled Anthropogenic Emissions of Methane in the United States. Dr. Miller, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me on the show today.
There's been a growing concern, as you know, about methane leaking out of the melting Arctic, and that's why it's alarming to find the government agencies, like the Environmental Protection Agency, may have been underestimating real methane emissions in the lower 48 states. Why did your group undertake a new look at this?
I think we really came across this project a little bit by happenstance. It's really interesting that you mention methane leaking out of a melting Arctic, because that was really the first question that we were interested in. We had an undergraduate in our group. Her name is Talia Havis, and she was investigating methane emissions from Arctic and boreal regions of Canada, you know, really cold parts of Canada with lots and lots of wetlands that emit methane in the atmosphere. You know, we have collaborators here in the United States that are also taking measurements of methane in the atmosphere. And I had sort of thought, well, you know, why don't we try to do a similar type of analysis over the U.S. and see what we find there? And I think a lot of the results really surprised us, that we saw such high methane emissions, and in particular that we saw such high emissions over places like, you know, Texas and Oklahoma in the U.S.
And you measured those from planes and high towers, that sort of thing?
Yep, that's correct. So our colleagues at NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and DOE, the Department of Energy, take these measurements of methane gas in the atmosphere. So they take air samples from the top of telecommunications towers, and a lot of these towers are the height of the Empire State Building or taller. So they're really high up there in the atmosphere, or rather high up above the ground. And we also take air samples from airplanes and measure methane gas in those samples. So the sort of principle or the idea behind our study is that all methane that's emitted at the surface eventually goes into the atmosphere. So when we're measuring methane gas concentrations in the atmosphere, we're really seeing the amalgamated signal of methane gas emissions over a regional scale. And, you know, using these measurements of methane gas in the atmosphere, we can get a pretty good estimate of total emissions of the gas over, say, a region or over the entire United States.
And the bottom line is, how much more methane is America emitting than the EPA reports?
Our estimate of methane gas emissions is 1.5 times that of the U.S. EPA. And I'll give you a little bit more context on that number. The states of California and Massachusetts, for example, have required reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. And both states are requiring about a 15% reduction from current levels by the year 2020. In contrast, you know, the discrepancy between our study and the U.S. EPA's estimate is more along the lines of 50%, and 50% is a whole lot greater than 15%.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This